Shopify is a global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. And sell more with less effort thanks to the Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/redcircle, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/redcircle now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/redcircle.
The following is brought to you by the Social Suplex Podcast Network.
This is All Things Elite. Welcome back to All Things Elite. Load up the pod, man, it's on when we speak. Rich right here, let me warm it up for Austin and Floyd. Couldn't be no one but the boys. When it come to All Things Elite from the fan perspective, swear, man, it ain't no question. Hear from them first. Swear, man, they putting in the work. No, they had to get me for the verse. Social Suplex Network Zone. I was at a time in your headphones. Austin and Floyd on the microphone. Backing out on a rant, getting in the zone. Pulling up the show, give it 7 stars, you already know. Who else could it be but the show with the proclivity for a positivity? I'm gone.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to the 255th episode of Social Suplex's podcast about AEW with a proclivity for positivity. Welcome to All Things Elite. My name is Austin Sumwas, and I am the host of this lovely show. Joining with me, as always, is my good buddy and friend, Mr. Floyd Johnson Jr. My man, how are you doing?
Dude, I am good. I'm awake. It took me a few minutes to get my body going this very late evening, but I am awake. And
folks, I make this man record way later than he should because I have to record on a Friday, and high school football keeps me in work significantly longer than most days. So I am making this man record literally at 1 a.m. Eastern time.
Yeah, so I like when I was younger, you know, I'm not old. I always make jokes like I'm 100. But right. When I was younger, you know, I could take a nap in the evening and just pop up and just start talking about wrestling. Well, I realized my engine it takes a second to warm up, unlike it used to. So yeah, I was like, I want to do this right now, but my body's wasn't necessarily agreeing with me. Uh-huh. But other than that, yeah, we skipped a week. I wanted to address that real quick. We do acknowledge we slipped a week. The reason was I had a family emergency last Thursday. Wife's sister had some complications from a routine surgery, and it was the day I was leaving for a trip, so I'm trying to, I don't know if anyone's ever, how many people on this show has ever went to conventions. Well, when you go to conventions, like a comic convention or whatever, you pay for everything, and it's all non-refundable, so whether you go or not, and the best you can do is try to recover your money or whatever. So, I'm leaving on last Thursday, and that's when I was supposed to leave. Well, my wife's sister had a surgery the day before, which was Wednesday, and yeah, there was a lot of complications during the surgery. So, if you pray, thoughts, whatever you do, send them that way, because she's still not out of the woods. That's how bad it went. And so we're getting into Thursday, and I'm like, hey, babe, you know, I had decided I wasn't going on the trip or anything. And she knows, you know, it's non-refundable. And it was the next day. She's like, you're not a doctor. The money's been spent. So go. So I went, and it was kind of reluctant. I'm like, I wanted to go. Of course I wanted to go. Don't get me wrong, but I wanted to be there for my wife because That's why you're married. That's why you have a significant other to be there at the tough times. There's a lot of different reasons, but that's one of the main reasons. Yeah. So she told me to go. She's a fucking soldier. I tell people, I'm like, nothing I do or happen or fun. Everything looks amazing on the internet that I do, and it's amazing. But there's work that goes on behind it, and it doesn't happen if it's not for her. And this was another way that even in this tough time for her, she still was the MVP of my life. Because she told me to go, and she told me to have fun. She told me she'd keep me updated. But she's like, don't just sit around and worry about it all weekend. Just go have fun. So I did. I went, and great thing is by the time I got to San Antonio Thursday night, she was pretty much out of the impending, hey, we think she's not going to make it situation, right? Mm-hmm. She wasn't great, but she was in that situation. So if anybody follows me on Facebook or anything like that and you've sent any amazing thoughts, I appreciate you for that. If you haven't, you probably didn't even know what was going on because I didn't post a lot about it on my social media because that's not kind of what I do. I let my wife handle that. That was her situation, so I didn't want to speak out of turn, so I let her handle it.
Yeah, I know. It's an absolutely scary thing, and yeah, you're not kidding when you say Crystal is a soldier. And like I've been keeping updated on what she's been sharing and everything like that. And again, I'm still pulling for her to make a full recovery and everything like that, obviously, because that's scary. Even if she is like a little better, like it's still like it's a lengthy process. And I'm hoping she's able to get back home from the hospital. I feel bad for Crystal having to be able to, you know, have this whole situation on her hands because it's scary.
Yeah, it's scary. And it shows you it reminds you of the important things and how fragile life is and all that kind of stuff. You know, I could say all the cliches, but it really, I mean, it's cliche because it's true. It does remind you, you know, like, enjoy your life. Do what you can while you can. Take care of yourself. Take care of yourself. I mean, you know, have a salad every now and then. Work out, that kind of stuff, you know, that kind of stuff, because that kind of stuff catches up with you. And I don't mean this into her situation. I mean, her situation is whatever, but it was just all the stuff that was going through my mind in that weekend. But so that pause, terrible segue. Had an amazing weekend. And it was called SpaceCon in San Antonio. It was a convention for like Star Wars, Star Trek, Stargate SG-1 and such. I am going to wrap this up very quickly so we can get the show over with because both of us would like sleep. But just a very quick synopsis. Met Thanos, the guy that played Thanos, Josh Brolin. Mary
Elizabeth. You met Josh Brolin?
Yeah, you didn't see the picture? Yeah.
No, I didn't see that one.
Met Josh Brolin, the guy that played Thanos. Mary Elizabeth Winstead. She was in Ahsoka. That's why she was at the show. But, you know, she was in Scott Pilgrim versus the World.
Amazing movie.
And then for me, the show that movie that was introduced to me was Sky High. She was fucking awesome in Sky High.
Yeah, she's great in Sky High, too.
She played Roy Payne, but she's been in so many movies. She's also married to Ewan McGregor, who was at the show, too. So we met her. Had a great weekend with my friend Cassie. Me and Cassie hadn't done me and Cassie was the person that introduced me to sci-fi. Our first show was SG-1. That's why we went, and we took some pictures with the cast of SG-1 because that was our first show. That's her favorite sci-fi show, but that was my first show. That's what started me down that sci-fi rabbit hole. And so we hadn't had a weekend. We're both married, you know, living our lives, so we haven't had a weekend together in a while. So it was really cool to spend time with her and my friend Sheila, and we met a lot of people, met some people I didn't even, you know, think I was going to meet. I was like, dude, it's terrible, and you of all people understand this. Wrestling is a very fucking expensive hobby. Yes, I would just love one of my hobbies to not be fucking expensive.
Mm-hmm.
Just one. One, I'm like, and during this time, I was going to go on this long tribe about WrestleMania tickets and the like, dude, how expensive they were. Well, so yeah, somebody sent me tickets to WrestleMania, and they were like, how much the tickets were more than I spent on all of my AEW shows this year. And, you know, I don't sit in terrible seats. So it's like, all of my shows this year would have fit in one WrestleMania. And I was like, P-A-S-S, pass. Thanks. Mm-hmm. Oh, thanks, buddy. But, no, it's just having a sci-fi and so Star Trek, Star Wars, all that stuff. If you want to do it like we do things, because we're broken. We don't just like things. We don't just casually watch things. When we watch things, it's like, oh my God, I need to know the writer, director, who's the first production assistant. And now I got to go meet all the people from it. And yeah, that shit's like anyone who ever complains about how much it costs to talk to a wrestler. I literally took a screenshot for a friend. I will send you how much I paid for everything at this day, and you will shut the fuck up.
Yes.
Yeah, because that's how bad it is. It's bad. But no, I had a really amazing time, really good time with friends, wrapping that all up. And I'm really ready to talk about the show. But last week, if we were going to miss a week of AEW wrestling, last week was the week that happened, because me and Austin, for probably the first time since we met and started covering the show, he's like, I don't really have anything to say about Dynamite.
Yeah, no, I send you DMs about it, and I literally go, like, I was like, I mean, this was basically just the heat building show, and I was like, I got nothing. I liked what they were building for Fright Night, but I was just like, what am I supposed to say, man? I just don't know what else to say, because there was just so much. It was building to other stuff, but like nothing foreseeable that we could talk about on that show. This show, however, there's a lot to go over. This Fright Night show was stacked. I mean, they had to make sure it was stacked, because they booked it the same night LeBron James returned to Cleveland. So, like, they had to make sure this show was stacked.
And the last game of the World Series was that night.
Yeah, you know, that's a whole nother thing, too.
Congratulations to Mr. J.R. Perez, our constant contributor.
Shout out.
His Dodgers won the World Series. That dude's on cloud nine. Mm-hmm.
Fuck the Yankees for now and forever. New York sports can eat a dick.
I have been the best friend ever, because I have had to listen to him talk about baseball, and
something you don't care about.
I'm like, whoa, go baseball. They baseballed harder than the other team baseballed. Cool. all I heard all season was the Dodgers were the best team, were going to win the World Series. And then,
I mean, they were the best team on paper, obviously, with the money they spent. For once, like, it worked out for them, because they hadn't had a World Series win since the Mickey Mouse win that they had in 2020 during COVID. And now they actually have a convincing one. And Shohei Ohtani deserves a ring.
Yes.
Shame he couldn't do it in the other team that calls themselves Los Angeles, even though they're in Anaheim, not a Los Angeles.
Did they even have a winning record the time he was there?
The Angels? I'd have to look that up. I'll figure that out after the show, but I don't know.
That was just like my big thing was like, not only did they not win, I don't think they were actually ever relevant other than the fact that they had him on their team.
And Mike Trout, Mike Trout will soon be leaving soon, but that's beside the point.
But so there was a lot of fucking competition Wednesday.
Yes, and they put on a good show.
Yeah, and I tell people all the time, you know, like, I'll go through this, I watch wrestling like a TV show. And if you've ever watched any type of series, like a 10-episode series, right? So you get your episode one, usually starts off exciting. Episode two, then usually like 3 to 5 is just them setting the table to get to the last 3 episodes of the show, which are going to be bangers. I've seen a lot of this talked about on this Agatha All Along one, that how, you know, there was some build episodes and no one knew what was going on, and then those last 3 episodes, it was the greatest Disney series ever or whatever, or Marvel series ever. That's what's going on with AEW right now. You're kind of eating your vegetables. There is something coming. Don't know what it is. I mean, I think we got a little bit of it on this Fright Night, but there was something coming. But you had to build the Black Bull BCC Death Riders. That's what I'm going to call them from now, BCC Death Riders.
Yeah.
You had to build them as this unstoppable, credible threat, because that's what you got to do. Mm-hmm. I mean, NWO did it for 2 years.
Literally.
2 straight years of the NWO winning. You know, it was a different time. People were more patient. But 2 years of ending with the NWO taking over, even when the other guy won, the NWO still took over, you know, that kind of thing. So we're in that build right now. So if last couple episodes or whatever, you're like, ah, nothing happens, you got to stick with it because something's coming.
Yeah, and there's a lot to look forward to. Yeah,
you can tell there is a different direction. If AEW over the last few weeks, even though you know the episodes were where they were, it feels like it's building to something, and I haven't felt that way in a while for the shows.
Yeah, no. So like, it's genuinely exciting just to see some of the stuff they're setting up, and we're gonna get into everything on this episode of All Things Elite. But before we get into everything, guys, we want to make sure you guys are downloading this fine show on Apple Podcasts or YouTube Music. If you listen to us on Spotify, wherever you choose to listen to us, give us a share with your friends, family, coworkers, whoever you wish. And also rate, review, and subscribe so you don't miss a single episode. Follow us on Twitter at ATElitePod. You can also follow at Social Suplex, who make this show possible. Check out all the other shows they have on their network. I am at Austin Sumowicz, S-Z-U-M-O-W-I-C-Z. And Floyd is at Floyd Johnson Jr. on Twitter. And just big news of the week, I guess, that we could say for this show. I actually just saw something that just broke recently. He's no longer with AEW. I will mention it, not just on top, just because I saw it. But apparently, Marco Stunt has announced that he's retiring from wrestling.
Yeah.
Apparently broke on social media. He made a giant post about it.
Yeah, looks like it was concussions.
Yeah, I was going to say injuries, I'm sure. Like, when I saw it, I'm like, this guy got hurt, I bet. And I'm like, oh boy, I hope he's all right. But yeah, seemingly concussions was the meaning behind it. But hey, man, that was a guy that was in AEW from day one with Jurassic Express. So once they threw him into the group. And hey, man, even though he's a very controversial wrestler because of his size, he was a crucial part of that team, and I feel like a crucial part of that faction and one of the things that made it work, I feel like.
Yeah, he definitely made the faction work, and especially when they, you know, turned, he was an important part to them turning.
Yeah.
So I want to send that. Best of wishes in his wrestling afterlife, and if he still has something to do to wrestling, like backstage, maybe puts on shows, anything like that, I wish him the best, because I do think he was an important part of AEW, especially in the youth of it. Just anytime you needed somebody just to look impressive, all you had to do was put them in that match with Marco Stunt. He bumped like a maniac, and then the visual there. Even this year, he was in a match with Jungle Boy or Jack Perry, your favorite wrestler. And, you know, Jack Perry, it's kind of hard to have people that make Jack Perry look big where he can bully him. You could bring him. They brought in Marco Stunt, and he filled the role perfectly. And if that's his last, I believe that was his last match.
That was his last AEW match.
Yeah. And that's kind of cool because, you know, he came in as a member of Jurassic Express with Jungle Boy, and his last match with the company was a match with Jungle Boy. So that's kind of cool.
Yeah, and again, it did what it needed to do. Best to hope that Marco's just able to live a healthy life and everything like that, but like, appreciate him for what he did for AEW. But we're just going to move right in now to AEW Fright Night, taking place from the Wolfson Center in Cleveland, Ohio. Show opened up amazingly. So can I just say, this was genuinely one of my favorite openings to Dynamite that I've heard, that I've seen in quite a while. The old school, like, 50s, 60s, like, horror intro, like this, like, monster of the week type of thing that they did for the Dynamite was amazing. And then you have the Death Riders, and you have them talking shit, and you have Claudio's promo and in the video package, and then you just hear Orange Cassidy in the back tell him to stop the video, to cut it. It freezes. We then wipe into the arena, where Orange Cassidy walks out as he gets ready to cut his opening promo. Like, just from that, like, that's very new to AEW, something like that. You know, the combination of the great Halloween, like, just cheese that I love, But then just the way that they took that story and then Orange Cassidy made a statement being like, no, now you're seeing him having to step up and lead a guy who does not want to be in that role, but knows he has to be in that role. And he's taking the initiative. And by cutting off that video package, he's putting his foot in down and being like, all right, we're going to make this whole thing in. Like, we're going to start this thing right now. That was awesome. His promo, he goes basically about how, like you said, like I said, this is not who he is. I don't come out here and tell you I'm a leader for 10 minutes because I'm not. But after I watched my best friend Chuck Taylor get his neck crushed by a steel chair, I was surrounded by the people that I should have been. I admire their courage because they're all talented, but they're very young. I was surrounded by the future of AEW. They have no idea the danger that they are in because Jon Moxley is dangerous. I knew right then and there if Jon Moxley has his way, there's no future for AEW, and these young talent have nowhere to go. Jon Moxley doesn't need AEW, but I need AEW. I don't exist without AEW. There is no us without AEW. So he says, I need to cut the head off the snake and make sure nobody else gets hurt, and I will do it by myself to protect everybody. And he challenges Jon Moxley for the AEW World Championship, where he takes the symbol of this company out of your bag and I put it in my backpack. He's like, let me know. I'm not hard to find. I'm where I am every single week, right in this ring, because I'm freshly squeezed Orange Cassidy. I'm the next AEW World Champion, and I still don't need a catchphrase. I just love this opening. I thought this was really well done. I like the production of it and just how they turned the spooky, scary intro video and then transitioned it incredibly well to this great promo from Orange Cassidy, which gives people, like, again, they don't have Orange Cassidy cut promos like this very often. I honestly kind of wish, I like how it's spared, but you do kind of wish that you got a little bit more, because Orange Cassidy, when he gives a shit, is a character that you want to root for. But again, because he does it so sparingly, it means more when he does it. So I get both sides of that. But I thought this was just a really, really strong opener, and it immediately got me excited for the rest of the show moving forward.
Absolutely. There are vague whispers of AEW doesn't tell stories. And I'm like, you just don't pay attention. We don't, no more oxygen. Those people don't get any more oxygen. They don't get any more of our time. They don't get any more of anything, because if you don't think this was a functional, like, them telling stories, I don't really know what to tell you. This was brilliantly done on just so many different levels. I think this is the end of the old Orange Cassidy character to a point, and you're going to get straight aggression and all that stuff going forward, because he has met a serious threat. And you were going to say, they don't build stars. Dude, I did not know who Orange Cassidy was, or any of his aliases, or who this man was before AEW Dynamite. When he says he doesn't exist without AEW, to Floyd Johnson, the person that does this show about AEW, he did not exist before AEW. When he showed up and he popped up and he debuted, I had no clue who he was. I was one of the one people that were like,
And then you saw me and Sydney jumping up and down around in the background when he debuted at All Out in 2019, because we were literally at the show at Two Cup Stuff for the GCW show in Chicago, like the night before he debuted in AEW. So we saw him there and then immediately saw him in AEW for that battle royal, and we lost our shit.
Yeah, and I'm like, I don't know who this man is. I'm never a person that just because I don't know who it is doesn't mean they did anything. I just didn't know who he was. And he has slowly and gradually been part of some of my favorite angles and favorite matches in AEW. And now he's about to be the face of AEW. This is how you make a guy. In a night where you make someone, it was like, I mean, Jon Moxley put him over for the international title, and kind of that's when a lot of people started taking him seriously, whether that was you or not. That's when a lot of people started taking him serious. And now you got this where it's basically introducing you to the next evolution of Orange Cassidy. That it was great and was done, and it was a change from everything that he does. And he's like, hey, basically, I'm leaving the conglomeration around because I know what it means to do it. And what's even better is he's the only person that in the company that had beat all four of them in AEW. You know, like a lot of people have wrestled them in other companies, but he beat all four of them in AEW. So, this is going to be awesome. And it was a great way to start the show.
Really good way to start. We then moved on to the first match of the night, Adam Cole taking on the House of Black's Buddy Matthews. From the start of the match, Adam Cole jumped off of the apron, and you saw a moment where he felt like his ankle, that it was surgically repaired, and started to sell that, basically, in how he hurt his ankle again. Kyle O'Reilly was watching from backstage. And then Buddy Matthews proceeded to start working him down as he had trouble with the ankle. I saw some people get upset about it, basically. He was selling the ankle injury, but then was still able to do the Panama Sunrise, which is the one thing that people were like, how can you do that if you're supposedly having the ankle issues? So I know there were some critiques on that. I just figured I'd bring them up. But overall, still, I thought the match was pretty well done. The thing I love most about Buddy Matthews is his striking. That dude, like, whether it's knee strikes or just like his, like the way he just throws leg strikes or any kind of physical blows to his opponent, like it's always like it sounds just vicious, and he performs really, really well. He's just always been one of my favorite members of the House of Black, just because, like, wrestling wise, just because he can go. That dude can go. Adam Cole was able to get a couple thrust kicks. Buddy was able to curb stomp him to get a little bit of a revenge on that after his ankle was like, eh, but eventually he hits the Panama Sunrise. Buddy goes out of the ring. He hits him again on the arena floor with the Panama Sunrise, hits the boom knee, and then pins Buddy Matthews. Afterwards, he said, you reminded me just right now who the real Adam Cole is. And I thank you, Buddy. Cole offers to shake Buddy's hands. They do shake hands. Lights go dark, coming back on. Malakai Black is in the ring. He's got Adam Cole's hands, swapping places with Buddy. And Excalibur basically says this could be the next test for Cole on his journey to MJF in full gear. Solid enough match, I think, to start things off, though, on the wrestling side of things.
Okay. This is going to be my hot take of the, like, it's probably one of the parts of the show I didn't like. We just did this with Bryan Danielson. I understand Adam Cole's coming back from an ankle injury, but we just did the stop mid-match stuff with Bryan Danielson. I understand when it comes to tropes, probably every wrestling trope is tired. If you anything you've done more than once, you know, a person can say, oh, I'm sick of this, because it just depends on your, it depends on how you feel and how you like your wrestling and your tolerance for certain things. Well, I didn't like every match with Bryan Danielson stopping because of his neck, and it might be broken and all that stuff. Because to me, if you're living in this world where this is a competition and a ref has to jump in the ring and the medics have to jump in the ring, the fight's usually over. Name me like one time where they like continue to fight in after in boxing or MMA after the medics get in the ring. Medics get in the ring, fight's over. So,
yeah.
It's like one of those things. I know it's supposed to be building up drama. It does not work for me, and I want to be specific because I know there's some people that eat this shit up. It doesn't work for me. It's just like, man, dude, perform, sell like a normal human being. You don't have to have Doc Sampson, who is literally a character on the show now. They use him so fucking much.
Yeah, he's there all the time now. People know him by name.
Yeah, he's in the fucking ring. He's a character. I'm ready for him to start bumping, you know, because he's in the ring so fucking much. I'm just like, dude, just fucking do the match. Have him sell the ankle. You can still have that moment where Adam Cole looks like he's not going to get up and Buddy calls him a little bitch, and then they finish the match. But you didn't have to do the. It's the trainer coming in the ring for me.
Uh-huh.
It takes me out of it. I know for other people, it does not bother them. For me, it takes me out of the match. Like, as soon as he got in the match, I started looking at my phone and stopped caring. Like, yeah. I heard what's going on. And again, I know it's not going to bother everybody. I know. It bothers me. It just,
yeah, man, it was very close to the last situation with the spot. Yeah. I was more so like, again, like the fact that, like, if you're going to sell an injury, and I get that they already had done it before, but like, if you're going to sell an injury, it needs to be sold for basically the entirety of the match. Whatever move you do that, like, requires that part of your body, whether it's a finisher or signature or whatever the case may be, you can't do that move in the match basically while you're selling that, is my personal opinion. So the doing the Panama Sunrise twice, like, with the ankle, like, and he's jumping onto, like, his legs with both, like, you get what I mean. So, like, that bothered me more so than the fact that they were doing this type of match again with the, like, stopping it and getting medics involved. I don't know. That was more so a thing with me where I was just like, eh, you know, eh.
Yeah, and that's how I was. It was just like, oh, so we're doing this again. And it just, we did it, like, with every fucking, feels like with every Danielson match up until he finally won it, we just had this stopping. And it's just like, it's such a stop in the thing, because the AEW is matches, matches, matches. And we know Adam Cole can go, and we know Buddy Murphy can go. Just let him go. And then, you right. know, do your thing. It's just like I said, Doc Samson, to me, has become too much of a character. AEW does this a little bit. They'll be doing something, and they'll just, like, and they'll be like, oh, that was cool, and they'll do it too much, and then they'll generally bring it back a little bit. I'm saying, Samson, keep him off out the ring for a little bit. Next week, when you do Malakai Black, let Adam Cole and Malakai Black cook. They had some amazing matches in NXT. Let them cook. Let them do their thing, right? And you can play the ankle up while doing their thing. So.
Yeah. Well, moving on now to the next part of the show. There was I'm going to say this right now. I'll mention it, and then I'll bring it up again for when we get to the match in the show. Christopher Daniels and Private Party were backstage, and Daniels was basically warning him, like, hey, Frankie Kazarian and I, we risked everything when we were in your spot. We were never the same again. Just think about what you're risking tonight. And Quinn was like, basically, we appreciate your words, CD, but we're good. We then moved quickly with Adam Cole, who had a backstage segment where he talked about how Malakai Black was on his radar. But I'm talking to Max right now because my ankle will never be the same. But I don't blame you, Max. I blame you for pretending that me and you would ever work. Adam Cole and MJF were always meant to be enemies. Look what you did to Wardlow, Sammy Guevara, Daniel Garcia. I was not going to just sit around and wait for that to happen to me. I care about the locker room and the fans. You've never been a part of that team, and you will never be, because I swear to God, I will get on my hands. I will get my hands on you at Full Gear, and when I do, I'll be happy to teach you another lesson. And he basically goes, one down, two to go. And again, it's another thing, too. It's like, I know Max made the joke. He's like, oh, look at Maxwell. He goes out there, and he makes people jump through hoops so they can get to him. Listen, man, like, just because you pointed out doesn't mean it's still, like, a tired trope that is part of your character. Is the only thing I would say. You pointed it out, and I'm like, you know, if you make a, like, joke about objectively, like, oh, that's bad writing, it's like, you're still bringing up the fact that, like, you're playing into it, you know what I mean? I don't know. I was just like, whatever, man. Like, Max being who he is and MJF being who he is, but, like, I can only do this storyline so many times of just, like, you got to go through seven guys to get to MJF.
Yeah, because MJF is not in a position of power right now.
No.
He doesn't have a belt. He's not undefeated.
If he's champion, I can put up with it.
The dude, like, if they had said, hey, he wrote in his new contract, the bidding war of 2024 that didn't happen, that he doesn't have to wrestle any match he doesn't want to. Something. Give me, as the audience, give me a reason that he's got the high ground.
Mm-hmm.
Because from what I understand in this professional wrestling company, the booker gets to put whoever he wants against each other. So why does this person have this super card where people have to jump through hoops to wrestle him.
Yeah, that's just where I'm at with that right now.
That's where I was
another one of those things where I was like, you know, it's been the build shows that we've had with AEW Dynamites recently, and that was one of the instances where it's just like, you know, like the match between Adam Cole and MJF is going to be amazing, and the payoff's going to be great. But holy shit, we got to get through a lot of filler in between just to get to that.
Yeah. Yeah, and it's like, yeah, and tell me why. Tell me why. Tell me why should I want MJF? Because as far as I know, when it comes to who did the fucked up thing to who last, Adam Cole's still the fucked up dude. Cole. Yeah, he's still the fucked up dude. So.
I still could not believe that they actively had the Undisputed Kingdom come out there and like actively like reference the storyline. I was like, no. We were supposed to forget this ever happened. Let's not try to find a way to still get this in there. Like this never happened. We took the neuralizer to the face and we're supposed to forget about all of this.
Yeah, and I know they tried to recon it. They try to retcon it, and it's just like, no, you're not the good guy, Adam Cole. And this feels like almost like the Swerve and thing when they were trying to make Swerve the babyface, and I kept screaming, no, you're not. Adam Cole is not the bad guy. I mean, Adam Page is not the bad guy. I'm like, all the Adams got confused for a second. Adam Page is not the bad guy. And I'm like, and that's how I feel like this. MJF is not the bad guy. MJF legitimately changed to try to be his friend, and Adam Cole fucked him over. So why do I care about Adam Cole beating MJF? And I'm just talking about this show. What's the three words for the sickos? We are the sickos. We are the definition of the sickos. We literally take an hour out of our life, an hour plus out of our life every week to talk about this show, right?
Mm-hmm.
Most weeks without fail. So if we're asking the question, address
the other sickos.
Other sickos are too. It's like Adam Cole and MJF are going to have an amazing feud. They're going to put on amazing matches. Why do I care who actually is victorious in this situation? Because they're both dicks.
That's pretty much it right now. Like I said, and hopefully we'll get more just to be able to fully tie it together a little bit. But getting into something that I did want to talk about on last week's show was one of the few things. I wanted to get your thoughts on these Kyle Fletcher promos. Obviously, last week's was the one that had a lot more weight to it, with him constantly in the promo being like, I am nothing like you. And trying to set himself apart from Will Ospreay, and he did so by shaving his head in the middle of the ring. And then this one, basically, he said he was going to call out Will Ospreay. He's disappointed because he's not here. He didn't show up. And then Mark Davis makes his return to AEW and goes, I wish I could look you in the eyes and say it was good to see you, but Will's at home because of what you did to him. He's someone we call brother. I don't know who I'm looking at when I look at you. To which Kyle goes, Don Callis opened my eyes to the truth. Will never cared about either of us. You can forget about him because I'm sure he's forgotten about you. I never forgot about you because I knew the day would come. And I made sure when I did that you would always have a spot in the family. And Mark goes like, we had an empire. You destroyed it. And Mark Davis is told by Kyle Fletcher, before you go, there's going to be a day very soon when you're going to have to make a hard decision, and I have shown I have no problem cutting the past loose. So a little bit of a tease of like he's trying to get Mark Davis to join the Don Callis family. He's holding firm, but now you have a little threat here from Kyle Fletcher because of that. So, but I wanted to get Floyd's thoughts on just these recent promos that we've gotten from Kyle Fletcher, because he's. These heel promos that we've gotten have been talked about a little bit.
Well, in wrestling, it is the booker, promoter, blah, 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 and every wrestler's guy to make new stars, right? Kyle Fletcher has been losing in amazing matches for how long now? And like a months. Year. Yeah, no, it's been like a year because Darius got hurt last November, right? Mm-hmm. He's been gone since like last October, and they've put Kyle Fletcher in these situations, and they're just like, he's the next guy. He's the next guy. Well, it was time for that character to evolve, right? But I it was funny because I was thinking about it, and believe me, if I'm misremembering, I'm sorry, but I feel like when Triple H was in DX, right, and he joined the corporation, right, it felt like he had. I mean, he was a star at DX, but he was being the guy. He was trying to become the guy. He right. had a lot of these type promos. And it's one of those things, again, it's kind of an eat your vegetables type promo because I think he's doing it really good. But they're tough to sit through. Because yeah. we've heard the it's your fault, you did this to me promos thousands of times in wrestling, right? And mm-hmm. some people just fucking eat these up, but for the majority of them, we've heard it before. And he cut the promos and they were performed and executed well. He's good on the mic, but they're kind of hard to sit through. It's like you have to sit through them, but they're kind of hard. And I think he's done a good job. It's just right now, there's a lot of heat in the AEW. And there's mm-hmm. very little light at the end of the tunnel, right?
Yeah.
So in the middle of his heel turn, we also have MJF delivering epic promos about why he's a dick. We got Mox starting off the show with an epic promo why he's a dick. And if you come down to it, they're so much better at it than he is, right? At this point in their yeah. career. So it's like, it's not as glaring that it's different, except you're getting promos similar, not the same, similar to this through the show. And it's like, yeah, okay, we see what you're going for here, but, you know, it is tough to sit there. If someone says, yeah. hey, I have a problem watching this on the show, I'm like, yep, that's all I can say.
Pretty much, man, pretty much.
Yeah.
But I will say this one was pretty decent. I loved seeing Mark Davis back and seeing the possibility.
I was very happy for that. I was starting to question if he was going to ever wrestle again.
I know, because he'd been gone for a while.
Right. Yeah, and it was like, I was questioning it, and it's like, I'm a big Aussie Open fan as far as wrestling teams, and I knew at this point we probably weren't getting them again, but I want them to do something with him. He's such a good wrestler. I mean, when he's done with this, because I always think about what's next, put him in a tag team with someone. There is someone that needs a good tag team partner, and I think Mark Davis would be perfect for him.
Yeah. We move on now. Hangman Page had a promo where he talked about how Jay White entered the Owen tournament back in July with his eyes set up on the men's championship, but I knocked him out and I hurt him so bad that he spent 3 months at home. When he came back, he came looking for me instead of the championship, which was a big mistake. You want to offer me redemption? Because there's no such thing as redemption. Not for you, not for me. There's only the wins and the losses and the consequences that will follow. At the end of Full Gear, when, not if I beat you, I will stand over you with my hand raised and I will leave you hurt with less than you had before. Jay White, I will leave you behind. So, solid enough promo. It's going to be a cool little match, I think, when we get this at Full Gear. It's just weird to me, just like when Jay White came back, how he immediately became a babyface. It just threw me off for a second. Like, I'm all for it because, again, Hangman's technically supposed to be the babyface, but he's not because, you know, he's an asshole.
Yeah.
Nope. But
well, it actually does.
Shopify is a global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business and sell more with less effort thanks to the Shopify magic, your AI-powered all-star. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/redcircle, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/redcircle now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/redcircle.
Makes sense. Cause they
no, it
had,
does, yeah.
Because they had Bullet Club Global had pretty much turned face. So when he came back and saved them from the asshole Hangman, it's it's an earned face turn. Like,
it is earned, yeah.
Yeah, some of those, like some of these turns, I was listening to Joe Lanza. So if you've heard these exact words that I'm using before, I thought they were perfect. I didn't know how to articulate it, and then I heard it on the show that it's like the earned face and heel turns, and it was like I heard it from him, and I was like, that's the perfect way. He actually he is one of the few people that has earned their turn. He came back and saved Juice Robinson. He is a good guy at this point. And he's not a good guy, quote unquote. The dude is still Jay White. He will still cheat and do whatever he has to win. But he came back and defended his friend. That makes you a good guy. Other than that, a lot of these turns have not been really having a reason for the turn.
Yeah, no, kinda, for sure.
It's like, oh, that guy's a heel now. Yes, because we said so.
Like, there you go. Yeah. We then move on to when the Death Riders made their entrance to the ring. John Moxley, Marina Shafir, Wheeler Yuta, Claudio Pack. Moxley then gets on the mic being like, I don't expect Orange Cassidy or anybody else to appreciate what we're trying to do right now, but one day you'll understand. Orange came out here. He thinks he just challenged me. No. I challenged you. I challenged you when I had your friend Chuck Taylor's neck broken. I freed you from distraction so you could focus on some goals. You better be ready to die in this valley because I'm willing to die in this ring. Orange Cassidy said nobody's going to get hurt. He's a real cool customer. He thinks he's pulling the string. Let's see about that right now. To which they immediately grab Wheeler Yuta, Marina, and Pac, and then Claudio gets a chair, puts it around Wheeler's head, and looks like they're going to break his neck. Orange Cassidy comes out here trying to save his former best friend. And that's when Claudio pulled him away. Moxley starts beating up Orange. And that's when Wheeler then proceeds to jump on Orange. So seemingly that was just a ruse to get Orange Cassidy to come out. Dark Order comes in. Then more people come out. Eventually, though, one of the spots of the night, for an amazing reason and a not-so-amazing reason, Darby Allin pulls a Sting and is dropping from the rafters in an amazing spot. I think it turned out amazingly. But eventually, as he comes down and drops from the rafters, he sneaks up behind Claudio and he gets thrown towards the table and the table breaks like it's nothing. The announcer's table just collapses. It was a little disappointing, but that being said, though, it doesn't take away from how cool the moment of Darby dropping from the rafters was. But
yeah, they give
normally
it, they
we get tables
much.
That don't break. Normally we get tables that don't break. That one just broke like with the softest of touch.
Yeah, they gimmick the gimmick too much.
A little bit too much. You know, which is, I get it, Darby's kind of smaller, but like, you know, it should not have been, you shouldn't have given a gimmick to
I laughed because it's like, I am like, I knew it was going to come up, but I'm like, dude, it's like some, you know, if the thing is in this wrestling world where you have to decide between, you know, being too safe to the point where you get stuff like that or not, I'm always going to say edge on the side of safety. And you will never hear me. And it's like, hey, do what you got to do. Because I'd rather the table break too easily than it not break at all and the person get hurt, which we've seen happen quite a bit.
For sure. And then eventually, like, everyone's going at each other. Top Flight, Leo Rush, Private Party comes out. Daniel Garcia comes out. They're all fighting. And that's when the EVP's music hits. And that's when the Young Bucks come out. And this was after everyone's kind of fighting into the crowd. And then Daddy Magic literally goes, are they going to take the credit for running these guys off? It transitions directly into the tag team championship match between the Young Bucks and Private Party. Obviously, if Private Party loses, this was set last week. That meant they would have to split up. Now, I will say, the instant that this match was announced as if they lose, they break up. And then when we had the promo backstage tonight, I mean, on this show of Christopher Daniels warning them about, like, think about what you're doing. I'm like, oh, Private Party's winning the fuck out of these belts.
So I hear you say that. But let me tell you, as a person that talks to a vast majority, a vast amount of different minds of wrestling and listens to the show, they had a lot of people convinced that they were breaking up Power Party.
Oh, I believe that for certain. Yeah,
I'm just saying they did this is more me giving a shout out to AEW. They did a great job of me not knowing who was winning that match. So
it was good. I think people really bought into like the Mark Quinn being concerned when Zay was setting the gauntlet down, basically of like, if we lose, we break up. But then the match itself too, the way that they structured out the match.
Yeah. And that's what I was going to get to. I believed every false finish in this match. They
absorbed. There was so much shit that that Private Party went through when it was, Mark Quinn got taken out because of Okada, and then Isaiah Cassidy was just taking all the fucking damage and just refused to die, basically. He just kept on kicking out, and it was so many near falls. Fans were so hyped into this, and again, they finally pulled the trigger after years, literal years. Private Party are the brand new AEW World Tag Team Champions. First thing I said when this match finished was, it's about fucking time. Because the way that these guys had such a level of like growth, it felt like, and then it just disappeared. It feels like we're back to kind of what we were expecting them to be when AEW first started, when they made their mark in their first match with the Young Bucks in the first year of AEW Dynamite. In the first month or two of AEW Dynamite. Really, really, really good job. There was even a point where Matthew pulled out the one-winged angel, which threw me off so fucking much that they decided to pull that out. But false finishes galore, crazy maneuvering, awesome wrestling. Dude. It was a really, really – this was probably match of the night, I would say, if we're being honest.
I haven't had this feeling on an AEW match in a while,
especially in a tag team title match
where they had you on the edge of your seats, not knowing what was going on. I loved it. I've been rooting for Isaiah and Mark forever. Mark had that long fucking injury. People are like, well, they took forever. I'm like, there was literally a year and a half where this man, they couldn't put the titles on Private Party. It was a year and a half that they couldn't put the titles on. So it was like 5 years.
I also think when they were doing their stuff with the Hardys too, I think there was just a period of like, you know, they were in this little group, but like there was no real plans for it, I felt like.
Dude, I've heard this addressed. And they wanted to work with the Hardys. They grew up to the Hardys.
But I think that just put them away from that trajectory.
It sucked. That's all I was going to say is it sucked. And it happens, you know, with wrestling. You know, you have an idea, they put it out there, and then it's not good. I mean, that's what happened with them. I feel like it was supposed to build to something, and it just didn't end up working out.
No.
And even when they were working with Hardys, that's when Quinn got hurt. So we don't know what the ultimate goal was for that, them getting out of it or whatever, because he got hurt. It was just shit happened. A lot of shit happened. 5 years, though, it built to this moment. They gave him the moment. I don't think it's going to be a long title run, but I'm not one of those people that start predicting losses. But it feels like with what they were doing right before this match, it's pretty obvious who's going to beat them for this title. But I love the moment for them. They deserve it. Push them. Like, they're going to lose the belts. But until they lose the belts, they give them scalps. Give them big names. Give them tag teams. Have them put on banger matches and then win. Because you've given them the belts. Now elevate them. Right?
Yeah.
You've given them the belts. Which you did very quickly. They didn't really beat anybody, and then they just got the belts. You're giving them the belts. Now elevate them. Make them matter. Make beating them when they finally lose, make it mean fucking something.
Yeah.
Because a lot of times they'll build up to these title changes and then the guy kind of goes back to the old spot that he was in, Orange Cassidy.
Yeah.
Or Orange Cassidy. He lost the international title. He was like the greatest international champion at all, ever. And then he just kind of got back with a new version of the Best Friends and did shit. You know, mm-hmm. that kind of thing. So make this matter. Make this count. Like, you've given them the belts. Now give them the push.
Yeah, 1,000%. That being said, though, too, there was a point in the afterwards where the Young Bucks actually hand the belts over to Private Party as a sign of respect, to which I said, no chance in hell are you trying to turn these motherfuckers face. I will not allow it. Fuck you. Like, no. I refuse.
Dude.
Do not do that.
Dude, they're doing a thing where someone's trying to take over AEW. If the elite ain't the team to come back and fight them, who the fuck is?
Oh, I know.
Yeah, I know. Like, this
That's
is
just a, I said. But like I said, it's like I don't fucking want it.
No, hey, you don't want it. It's coming.
No, I know.
No,
hey man, I could be like that guy, and I could be like, oh wait a minute, are you telling me that this group led by a former WWE champion, who is currently beating up everybody and is like this like dangerous force backstage with his buddies, has to be taken down by the young guys and the elite, that has no correlation to anything else that may or may not have happened in AEW backstage before. I could make that correlation, but I haven't.
Oh, I literally just felt like this was the NWO altogether, and Moxley was Hogan. That's all.
There's a little bit of that. That's what it is on base level. But I could make that connection if I wanted to. I don't do it, and I literally never bring it up.
Dude,
but
this was if dude, I pitched this storyline for Punk and FTR. This exactly what you're doing with BCC. I thought that was the goal with CMFTR, to try to take over the company, and then eventually the original elite, Kenny and the Young Bucks, had to come back and take them out. This is the story.
Yeah.
This is the story. This is the one I thought was going to take AEW to whatever the next level was, and it never happened. It is what it is, but we move on. That's all we can do, and it's like,
again, too, it's another one of those instances where you could tell, like, oh wait, like the puzzle pieces are put together, but like you realize that, like, oh hey, this other piece would have fit as well, and probably better if you would have jumped ahead of the pass. But
I don't know.
I'm not trying to focus on this shit.
I'll be real. I don't know if anybody can do better than what Moxley's doing right now.
Moxley's doing amazing. I'm not trying to take away from that either.
This is uber level prime Moxley. Well, his work right now, what he's doing right now, I think when the first Shield came out, I was a Moxley guy. I just loved.
Sure.
He was always one of the favorite people.
I feel like he was most people's favorite member of the Shield.
Yeah. He had the arms moving and he was cutting the promos and they were edgy and stuff. And it was just like, and then he did gas mask shit and he lost me. He's kind of getting me back. And I've never been like Sam, man, you might be winning because I've never been a Mox guy. He's kind of making me a Mox guy right now. So I don't know. Like I said, I'm not gonna make it about Phil. I do my best to let him be. That's how I try to do with Mr. Phil Brooks. I just let him be. You know? He enjoy your life. I wish you the best. And so I'm gonna do that. But yeah, this storyline correlates to a lot of storylines in wrestling.
No, yeah, there's a lot that it pulls from. Like I said, I'm just making jokes because they're gonna turn the Young Bucks babyface just to have the elite reunite and stuff like that.
Yeah,
and I poo poo that idea. I'll get over it. Here's the deal: I'll get over it eventually. But if you try to turn Jack face, I will absolutely refuse.
Dude, he's joining the Death Riders. I am 100% that he's joining the Death Riders. 100%. I don't think there's any path where he does not join the Death Riders.
I mean, he's got to do something.
He literally dresses just like them.
Yeah.
Like his whole motif with the black bust and the scapegoat, the darker image, it fits. It fits. And what's the ultimate? Jack's kind of a dick. He joined the Bullet Club, left. He now he's joined the Elite. He got what he could out of them. He's going to leave. Him joining the Death Riders or being Death Rider adjacent. Maybe he's not fully part of it, but Death Rider adjacent, or he's kind of cool with them. It just fits. Like, if he was to join and then take out Will or Yuta and write Will or Yuta off for a while like that, to me, that would make even more sense.
For real?
Yeah, because Will or Yuta seems like the square peg in the round hole right now.
And then what happens is then they genuinely make Jack Perry the scapegoat, and they just beat the shit out of him for 10 hours.
Yeah. So, no, there's a lot of ways this can go. That's one thing about this I'm very excited about. There's nothing new under the sun when it comes to professional wrestling.
Oh, yeah.
What's new is how the people perform it. And I feel like Mox is really, Mox, Claudio, Marina, this is like the most perfect.
That group has just become they're so dangerous, and they're so the way they're presented is really, really well.
This most perfect casting in wrestling ever. This is like, hey, this guy with blonde hair, beach blonde in the 80s, he should be like the Hulk Hogan and the face of the company. And, you know, like, this is, that feels like this kind of casting, because it's like they're all playing the characters they were born to play.
Yeah.
Like, Claudio has looked like $1 million and menacing in everything. He's the guy in the crowd that you don't want to fuck with.
Exactly.
Now he's playing that on TV. Marina Shafir always had a look of danger about her. And it was, you never got that presentation in the ring with her, right? And then he's like, oh, you're going to be Mox's heater. That's what you're going to be. You're basically in the China role with Triple H. You know, you're the badass. Nobody wants to fuck with you. Perfectly cast.
Yeah.
Everybody's perfectly cast except one guy that doesn't quite fit like the others.
There you go. There you go.
Yeah.
Moving on, though, we then have Jamie Hayter and Penelope Ford. Shout out Jamie Hayter's Daphne costume. Looked amazing.
And shout out to her. And shout out to Jerry and Penelope, the comebacks.
Comebacks.
Shout out to both of them.
And they're teasing about their match happening next week, which I'm excited for. Basically, Penelope Ford saying how she wants to get revenge for what was taken away from her, and it should be a lot of fun for that match. We then quickly had a promo with the Learning Tree, Chris Jericho, basically how he became the Ring of Honor World Champion. Last week in the ladder match, another thing that we forgot to mention, we weren't able to mention because we didn't have a show last week, the ladder match against Mark Briscoe, that Chris Jericho won to win the Ring of Honor World Championship to become the Nueve. And he is now, he talks about how he's going to take Ring of Honor to the biggest stage and the biggest success it's ever seen, because I'm Chris Jericho and I can. So I'm going to let everyone reach down between their legs, ease the seat back, and enjoy the ride, because I'm going to take Ring of Honor to places you've never seen before. So we'll just quickly, Floyd, the Jericho Ring of Honor World Champion thing, beating Mark Briscoe in the ladder match last week, because we didn't get to talk about it. You want to touch on it a little bit now?
With so much heat going on in AEW, it almost barely registered on the heatometer. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
They have built so much heat, and it was brilliantly done. Because you know what? He's been saying it. He's like, old guys are using young guys to stay on top. The young guy, well, not young, but the younger guy literally carried him up the ladder. He got the belt. Mm-hmm. Like, for all intents and purposes, Big Bill is the ROH champion.
Genuinely.
So I love that. I like heat. I like heat. I like hate and heat. It's amazing. Mark Briscoe, I love his story. I love his energy. But, you know, is he the face of any brand? No.
Mm-hmm.
Great moment, him being the champion. That was amazing. He had his run. He might even be the guy to beat Jericho. It would not be that for me. I would use that to build up your new face of ROH, right, whoever that's going to be. But they're going to do what they're going to do, you know. But I'm going to enjoy this. I have always liked the learning tree, even when other people hate it. I was definitely on that. Chris Jericho needs to go away. And you know what he does every time? He proves me wrong. You know, hey guys, all this stuff is over and everybody hates him. And they hate him the right way. It's not go away heat. It was. It was. They tried so hard to hate this man. And he says, fuck you. You think you hate me? I'm going to make you really hate me.
He's going to really give it to you.
I'm going to bring up a wrestler's dead brother. I'm going to do that. And you're going to be like, oh, it's cringe. Blah. And then you're going to hate me anyway. And you're going to be like, you're going to eat this shit up. And he did it. He force-fed you gruel. And now you think it tastes like the best gumbo you ever had. That dude's amazing. He's Chris Jericho. I you know, it's like I get caught up. I hear the reactions and I get in the room and I get around. I'm like, maybe Jericho's lost it. Maybe Jericho's lost it. And he makes me look like a stupid idiot every time. Every time. This dude's amazing. I don't know. I'm not going to ever call him the GOAT, but you're not going to tell me, you cannot tell me a person that has been around in wrestling this long and has managed to stay relevant this long.
Yeah.
Like,
that's, dude, it's just, it is what it is, man. You can't deny it. You just can't deny it.
Yeah.
We'll move on quickly now to the Brick House Camille going one-on-one with Chris Statlander. And this was solid. I thought this was solid. I just see it, like, AEW, like, I don't know, man. It's like, they're doing everything I want with Mercedes Moné, having her with a heater and everything like that. Statlander being in this match too, I think, is just, you know, building up her as well. She was able to pick up the victory over Camille and afterwards got beat up by Mercedes Moné. And that's when Mercedes basically goes with the mindset of when you want something done right, you do it yourself. So teasing those two locking up. I don't know, man. It just feels like the interest in Mercedes isn't where it should be, and I just feel like it's just not even close.
Wrestling
what it should be.
Wrestling's amazing, and you know, I remember doing John Cena's run, and I mistakenly hated John Cena, and I was like, wrestling's so boring with John Cena. And it wasn't that I hated John Cena; they didn't do a good job of building John Cena heels. They did not build people that you thought were credible threats to John Cena, so it made his matches uninteresting. It wasn't John Cena per se. It was like John Cena's opponents. He was never in anything interesting.
Right.
I feel that way about Mercedes. They have not built someone credible to where you need to see that person beat Mercedes. Or you need to see that match with Mercedes. We were hating Chris Statlander a month and a half ago. Unearned heel turn. Unearned face turn. So we kind of still hate her. So we don't really care if she beats Mercedes. Right?
Yeah.
Why is Chris Statlander this triumphant person that's going to finally beat the big bad Mercedes? No. No. She's face of the week for Mercedes to beat at a pay-per-view. That's what she feels like. And so it's not Mercedes' fault that people don't care. It's the booking's fault because they booked her opponents like shit. So you don't care if they beat Mercedes.
Mm-hmm.
It's not the person, it's the opponent. People want to see their people win, but they want to see them win against people that are actually a challenge. Chris Statlander could have came out and saved somebody. Mercedes could have been going. She could have done this. They give me a fucking reason to want Chris Statlander to win this match. Because I don't. I want Mercedes to win. And I want her to embarrass Chris Statlander because she turned on Willow. Okay? You haven't got the turn on Willow out of my mind as a wrestler.
I was going to say, yeah, because they just made her babyface after she won that match against Willow.
Yes.
And, like, that's left Willow in a weird spot, and now Chris Statlander is a babyface. I never agreed with it when they, like, I'm not saying that I don't like Chris as a babyface, but it just happened so abruptly and had nothing, like, at all. And we said that before on the show. It's like, you always have heel turns, have definitive, this is where the heel turn started moment, like the heel turn moment. You got to do that for with babyface turns as well. You can't just do the other, like, dude, and just get away with it.
Have Mercedes beating up Willow. Have Camille in there beating the shit out of Willow. I'm talking about to put her to the table, trying to take her out. And who comes and saves her? Chris Statlander. Boom! Face you rooting for. They hug. They make up. Now we want Chris Statlander to beat Mercedes.
Yeah.
That's it.
That's all you have to do.
How long is that segment? It's like, not at all.
It's literally 2 minutes.
And you fix Chris Statlander, and we actually want her to beat Mercedes. I don't give a fuck right now if she beats Mercedes. I don't care about the match. I'm not excited about the match. They could go out there and put on a banger. I want Mercedes to win.
Yeah.
Because I want Chris Statlander to get beat up. Because she deserves to get beat up for turning on Willow. Because I'm a sicko.
There you go. There you go. We move on now real quickly. There was just two quick little segments before the show had the main event. Mark Briscoe officially challenged Jericho, Big Bill, and Brian Keith to a Fight Without Honor match with Tomohiro Ishii and Kyle O'Reilly. We then had the Bucks leaving the arena as they were. First of all, there was a segment, too, where Jack Perry gets shoved by Daniel Garcia. And Danny fucking, like, threw this little kid against the wall, like, dude, made him look like a bitch.
You were living vicariously through him right then, right?
I'm like, Danny boy. Dude. Like, he tried the little, like, lunge back as Danny, and he just threw him harder against the wall. And I'm just like, make the head bounce. Just bounce a little bit more against the concrete wall.
At that moment, I heard the click on your mouse as you bought a Daniel Garcia shirt. I heard it. It's on the way.
Danny threatens him, basically being like, you know, how, like, hey, all this shit's happening, y'all are just gonna run away and act like a bunch of cowards and all that kind of stuff, to which Jack Perry proceeds to say one line to Danny where he goes, they used to dance for me too, and then that's where he lets him go, and then he's got this smirk on his face. And that's when you saw they were shredding, like, the Bucks and Brandon Cutler were, like, shredding documents in the background. And eventually they rushed off. They're in their they got their suitcases, and they basically say, we're taking a hiatus. We're working from home from now on. They leave without Brandon Cutler. And that's when Moxley and the Death Riders come out, grab him, and smash Brandon Cutler's hand with a hammer while Moxley's holding Christopher Daniels, making him watch. I don't know why Christopher Daniels was so concerned about Brandon Cutler.
Why were they looking to the Young Bucks, these complete selfish assholes that don't care anything about the company? That has been pretty documented over the 6 months. They only care about their success. Why are they looking for them to be the saviors?
Right. Wouldn't it make more sense of being like, of course we can't rely on you to get help anything that's going on around here. So, like, just fuck off. It would make more sense if Christopher Daniels goes, like, you know what? Y'all don't want to be a part of this. Y'all don't want to help with the problems that are going on. So just take a fucking paid vacation.
We hope the Death Riders get you. We hope they find you, kind of thing. Like, dude. I don't know. Why would you look to them at all?
Yeah,
you've been fighting
no
them
for it. Yeah.
Yeah, you've been fighting them. You know,
if they were to be like put into a corner, basically to see the error of their ways, it would make more sense for a babyface turn. But now they're just going to come back on the TV after their little hiatus, and then they're just randomly going to be babyfaces again because look, Kenny's back too, and all the elites full. It's like I don't buy any of the horse shit.
I hope there's someone in AEW that's like scrolling through online and they accidentally click on our show. So they listen to this and they listen to this and address it so they don't do exactly what we think they're going to do.
Yes. You got to make it make sense.
Dude, again, you can't say for the sickos and then have super humongous plot holes.
Correct.
Because you're not addressing the sickos at that point.
Yeah, no, 1,000%. We then had Swerve Strickland in the main event going one-on-one with Shelton Benjamin. God, Shelton just is a fucking killer. Like, that dude, like, still at his age, is still a killer, making Swerve just, like, take so much damage in this one. It was crazy competitive. Swerve was able to give a ton to Shelton. Shelton gave a ton to Swerve, I felt like, in this match. I just thought it was really, really well done. Eventually, after Swerve gets the victory with Swerve foot stomp off the top rope, he gets the pinfall win over Shelton. And then MVP gets on his phone. He's calling somebody. Lights go out for a split second. Swerve's music cut off. But when the lights come back on, Bobby Lashley walking down the aisle. He comes down, hugs MVP, gets in the ring, stares down with Swerve, and then Shelton distracts Swerve, and that allows Bobby to just completely drop him to the ground. They start choking Swerve. MVP's holding back Prince Nana, and they're just beating up Swerve, and then they just hold, like, security comes to break it up. There's the Hurt Business. There's the Hurt Syndicate. There we go. And MVP just going screaming, guess who's back in big business?
Dude. It was perfect. Well done. Big market. They represented Bobby Lashley felt like the person that you're supposed to fear. Dude, it was great. I want to give this moment the gravity because, like, this is what having two significant companies does.
Yes,
and I want to reiterate this for the people that just want the other company to die. We had this group that people loved, liked, whatever, all the different emotions for, and they basically helped carry WWE through the pandemic. They were there all the time, right?
Yeah.
Then it ended, and WWE decided they didn't want to go anywhere with this group. And that's fine. You know, that's their choice. WWE's making more money than ever. So they obviously, you know, made the right choice, right? The dogs they picked seem to be winning, right? Well, you know, in another world, this show goes to, I don't even know what channel Impact is on. No insult to Impact. I really don't. I don't watch it. So it goes to there and they debut and no one knows. You know what I mean? I mean, there's the hardcore Impact fans. They'll know, but in itself, they'll be like, oh, yeah, the Hurt Business is on Impact. Well, what if there was a major company with a major key TV deal on a major cable network out there? You can take this group that people wanted more from and you can debut them in another company that helped make this help continue the build of this star, this person that's supposed to be eventually the face of your company, of you know, thinking of Swerve Strickland. And he did, and it all worked out. And we don't get this cool moment, and we don't get this cool feud that's coming. We don't get this if there's not another major company, right? Yeah. And it's like, and it doesn't take away from your Mondays. It doesn't take away from your Tuesdays. It doesn't take away from your Fridays. You can still watch those shows. But now you also can see this group, the Hurt Syndicate, that you wanted to see before. And you know what? And they're going to go up against one of the hottest stars in professional wrestling right now, Sturge Strickland. And I'm hoping they add another guy to the group from AEW and they help start making him too. You know what I mean? They really go in and make something of this. And so I just like, dude, I'm down. This was perfectly done. Now, okay, now that I gave it the gravity that it deserved, there were two funny parts during this. And then when they were in the beatdown, you heard 90 seconds, 90 seconds.
Oh, so loud. You could hear the cue so loud.
90 seconds. Okay, I wanted to give the moment because I didn't want to go straight into that. I just
thought, I know.
Yeah, like I just thought it was funny as fuck. I'm laughing. And this isn't like, oh man, there's no minor league or anything like that. I just thought it was funny. It was the shit that happens when you're doing fucking live TV every week. I don't know if anyone knows this. It's hard to do live TV every week. I don't do it, and I'm glad I'm not responsible because, yeah. Yeah, the dude was talking too loud. The mic was hot. I don't fucking know. And he was like, oh, 90 seconds. Okay. And then there was this funny part where they had stopped it. And you could tell Lashley's like back, really excited to get back in the ring. And he's doing his menacing stuff. And he's like, post up, post up, post up. You heard him say that. And then they do that menacing pose to end the show. So it was just two things. Again, sickos, like I thought was funny. Like I said, it's no deal to be made. There's like, oh man, they gotta fix. No, it was just funny, and we move on. Okay, that kind of thing. And they did look fucking intimidating. And whoever they decide to put with them, if they decide to put anybody with, is going to look intimidating. And I took this moment because I watched this match and I saw the beginning. Shelton Benjamin standing there with Swerve Strickland. Now they had wrestled, I guess, a long time before. Go look at that. It was Serge Strickland. Shelton Benjamin looked exactly like he did right now because that man does not age. He's a fucking vampire. And then Serge Strickland was this fucking skinny human being. And it looked like the WWE guy against the independent guy.
A little bit.
And then Swerve, through hard work, dedication, whatever he did over the last 2 years, has completely fucking changed his body. And you know what it looked like now? Major league guy against major league guy.
And that's what the match was.
And that's what it was. And so for anybody that has a really, really small wrestler that they love and they like, oh, size shouldn't matter. It fucking does.
Unless you're Darby Allin, in which case you're just
Even with him, size matters. But he's the one of the people. He's Rey Mysterio. He's learned to take his physical size and use it to his advantage, right? Every match, he's the underdog. Every match with Rey Mysterio, he's the underdog. And it works for them. But in general, if you want to be taken seriously as a major league wrestling star, as Cody Rhodes would say, do the work, okay? Look at Swerve. Look at how he looked in his first match against Shelton Benjamin. Look at him now. He looks like he belongs in the same place as Shelton Benjamin. He looks like he's a major star. That is wrestling. Maybe it's something I'm hung up on that no one else is.
You care about it a lot. That's for sure.
No, I care about it a lot because the imaginary casual fans fucking care about it. When you're seeing a fight and there's this huge guy and then there's this small guy and the small guy is dominating the huge guy, you don't believe it.
Right.
You just don't. You look minor league. So when you're treated minor league and when they don't think of you as minor, they don't think of you as major league, it's one of the reasons. And do people get over it despite their size? Absolutely. It happens. But that is the exception to the rule.
Right.
So, Cody put on the size. I could go along with all the wrestlers. Yeah. Drew McIntyre. All these people that started being taken seriously once their bodies got right. That's just my soapbox. I'm done now.
Yep. We'll just move on from that. But that was AEW Dynamite from this week. A much stronger show, I would say. There was a lot to take place. I mean, you got Adam Cole's making his in-ring debut. Mark Davis came back. The debut of Bobby Lashley. The continuing growth of the Death Riders and what they've been able to accomplish. Setting up Orange Cassidy versus Jon Moxley for the world title at Full Gear. There's a lot of just like really good setting up stuff. Still a lot of it is just continuing to build the heat that will eventually lead to the payoff. But other than that,
yeah,
just another strong show.
And an amazing thing is they're keeping so much away from the Death Riders. Right now, the Death Riders are kind of beating up the little locker room guys, and then they got Darby and OC are the main guys. What happens when they catch Swerve's gaze? What happens when they catch the Bullet Club Gold's gaze? When they catch the gaze of the other stars in the locker room? What happens when FTR maybe decides, you know what?
Oh, yeah.
We think we've had enough of this. You know what I mean? So right now, they're doing a good job because BCC or the Death Riders, whatever you want to call them, is living in their own corner of AEW. And there is going to be build to bigger matches and bigger people later. So it's like, yeah, this is great. They're doing a good job because Swerve's dealing with the Hurt Syndicate right now. He's too busy, right? Mm-hmm. Jay White's dealing with Hangman right now. He's too busy. At some point, they're not going to be as busy. And what have you built over here is this menacing heel group that you have now built to have these big matches with your other stars when it's time.
Yeah, it's going to be a really exciting moment, too, when we get that to happen.
Yeah.
But I think that's going to close things out on this episode of All Things Elite, guys. Thank you so much for tuning in. We appreciate your guys' support. Continue to download the show on YouTube Music, Apple Podcasts, wherever you get your podcasts, Spotify, whatever the case may be. Rate, review, subscribe, share us around with your family, friends, family, coworkers, whoever you wish. Follow us on Twitter at @ATElitePod. You can also follow at Social Suplex, who make this show possible. Check out all the other shows they have on their network. I'm at Austin Sumowicz, SZUMOWICZ. Floyd is at Floyd Johnson Jr. on Twitter. I know my buddy's going to want to go to sleep pretty soon. I woke him up from his nap just to record this podcast, and I got to go do work tomorrow before I get to go on a little trip with my family. So I will let my buddy Floyd take us home on this episode of All Things Elite.
Two things before we get out of here. Chop tees. Go buy shirts. Go any of the shows on Social Suplex. Whether it is One Nation Radio, Keeping It Strong Style. I'm not going to go through all of them, but you know all the shows. Go watch it. Also, my personal thing, I bought one yesterday. The fucking AEW DC collab shirts are fucking awesome. They're awesome shirts. They got the comic books. It's Tony Storm, Britt Baker, Swerve, Darby, and Will Ospreay. I think those are the five. They look amazing. Go buy the shirts. I want to see more collabs like this. They only last if you buy the shirts. If the shirts just sit on there, it's something cool you saw, then you're not going to get any more. So definitely want to throw that out there. And the Chop Tees, definitely buy all the Social Suplexes shirts. And I think everyone, a few people that knew what was going on, sent me thoughts and prayers for my sister-in-law. I appreciate you all for doing that. I will say life, we're going to end this real quick. Life is real short. Just take a moment, appreciate the people in your life, and I will leave you how I always leave you. Whether it is home, work, or school, always do your best to be elite. See you in 3 weeks, Jackie.